Welcome back to Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena. I am Jack Llewellyn. Thank you, as always, for joining me. I'm coming to you from chilly and snowy Colorado. I hope most of you are getting more spring than we have in the last couple of days, even though later on this weekend it's supposed to be nicer. All right, last week, if you remember, we talked about the impacts and the effects of the cartel wars, drug trafficking, the war against drugs on Mexican cities, the Mexican people, Mexican culture and heritage. And we did that by looking in particular at Ciudad Juarez. Today, we're going to do something similar, but not exactly the same. Last week, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced a new operation, and we're going to talk about that operation. We're going to talk about the main suspect or target of that operation, but the operation itself focuses heavily on the area of Nogales, Sonora, so the Mexican city of Nogales, not necessarily Nogales, Arizona. And in doing that, we're going to get another sense of how the drug wars, drug trafficking, the cartel wars are impacting cities in Mexico, and by extension, the things that we discussed last week with respect to Juarez, history, culture, etc. We're not going to dive into the history of Nogales as much as we did with Juarez last week, but I do want to talk about Nogales just to give you an idea of what the city is like, and that'll inform some of the discussions we have later. So, Jerelica Nogales, that's the official name, but more commonly simply known as Nogales, is a city. It's the county seat of the municipality of Nogales in the state of Sonora, located in the north of the state, of course, on the U.S.-Mexico border, and is abutted on its north by the city of Nogales, Arizona. The name Nogales is the Spanish term for walnut trees. In the 2020 census, the city of Nogales had a population of about 265,000. Most estimates are that it's over 300,000 at the present time. Due to its location right on the border, right abutting a city in the United States, Nogales is, as you would expect, an important port for the entry of U.S. tourists. The downtown area consists of bars, hotels, restaurants, curio stores. One of the interesting things is the curio stores, they sell artisan products, handcrafts, leather arts, handmade clothes, flowers, things of that nature. Many of those items being sold are actually brought to Nogales from central and southern Mexico. Maquiladoras, or manufacturing plants that specifically are largely duty and tariff-free, employ a very large percentage of the population in Nogales. As you would expect, the combination of the proximity to the United States, the abundance of inexpensive labor, makes it an efficient and attractive location for foreign companies to have manufacturing and assembly operations. There are about 92 establishments in Nogales that produce exports, goods for foreign exports. And about two-thirds of those are located in just a couple of industrial parks. They employ more than 25,000 workers, which is a very large percentage of the population, or at least of the employed population in Nogales. Livestock is also important. Critically important is produce. So produce is one of Mexico's largest exports to the United States as a whole, and the entry point at Nogales, the Mariposa port of entry, is the most widely used route for produce destined for the United States. Currently, someplace about 37% of all produce imported from Mexico to the United States passes through Nogales. In the wintertime, the percentage of U.S. imported vegetables passing through Nogales jumps to about 60%. A 2020 estimate, which is the lightest I could find, but it estimated that $3.7 billion worth of fresh produce entered the United States through Nogales, with significant portions of that originating from different areas in Sonora and then in the adjoining state of Sinaloa. In descending order, as of about 2021, the top commodities shipped through Nogales were tomatoes, watermelon, cucumbers, squash, bell peppers, grapes, chili peppers, mangoes, honeydew melon, and eggplant. The flow of goods, of course, goes both ways. So the Nogales port of entry was the fourth largest crossing point for U.S. agricultural exports to Mexico. In 2020, again, that was worth about $1.1 billion, comprised largely of fresh fruits, grain, meat and meat products, and fresh vegetables, all of which are transported by truck and rail. So that gives you an idea of the city of Nogales. Last week, so initially on the 10th, so maybe just a little bit more than a week ago, and then updated on a fact sheet and a press release on the 12th, the U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced something they refer to as Operation Plaza Spike. Operation Plaza Spike, which is said to be an operation that targets the gangs and cartels in Mexico that facilitate the flow of deadly fentanyl, as well as its analogs and precursors and the tool to make the drugs, or the tools to make the drugs. According to the CBP, the operation is the next step in its strategy to combat fentanyl and other synthetic drugs, and is a whole of government and international effort to anticipate, identify, mitigate, and disrupt illicit synthetic drug producers, suppliers, and traffickers. Now, here's what's interesting. We've talked about this in the past. Remember, when, if you go way back to the Colombia days, there was a philosophy, at least in part, of divide and conquer. You know, if you can use one of the cartels to get to another, that may be okay. And also an idea that you really wanted to strike the head. If you get rid of traffickers on the street, that really doesn't do much. And even in cartel situations in Mexico, you know, if you get some local sicarios, that doesn't necessarily impact the cartel much, but there's an emphasis on going for the head. The philosophy now, at least with this particular operation, is a little bit different. CBP says Operation Plaza Spike targets a natural choke point in the flow of fentanyl trafficking and will start at the plaza located south of Nogales, Arizona, thereby limiting the amount of illegal drugs, particularly fentanyl, entering the United States and this is critical, and the number of illegal weapons headed southbound into the hands of the cartels. I've said this, Christ, I probably say it every week. It's just the numbers are staggering. In the fact sheet put out by CBP, it says from the beginning of fiscal year 2024 to the end of February 2024, CBP has seized 222,000 pounds of drugs, including more than 8,000 pounds of fentanyl. Within this same time period, CBP has also seized more than 1,600 weapons and nearly 200,000 rounds of ammunition. During the first 2 weeks of March 2024, CBP in San Diego stopped 73 different smuggling attempts. Think about that. During the first 2 weeks of March 2024, CBP in San Diego stopped 73 different smuggling attempts. That's something along the lines of a little bit more than five a day. The CBP in San Diego, from the stoppages, seized 131 pounds of cocaine, 11 pounds of heroin, almost 11,000 pounds of methamphetamine, and 213 pounds of fentanyl. The total estimated street value of the narcotics was more than $20 million. In 2 weeks, in March of 2024, in 2 weeks, 73 smuggling attempts were stopped, seized drugs with a street value of $20 million. So, talked a second ago about the idea of where to focus. The idea of this operation is to focus on the plazas. And here's what CBP says. The drug trade through Mexican plazas has accelerated the abuse of synthetic drugs, and to include fentanyl, its analogs, heroin, as well as methamphetamine and other chemically synthesized designer drugs. So how is Operation Plaza Spike supposed to work? CBP says what it's going to do is converge and focus resources on, as I said earlier, a natural logistical choke point within the cartel's operation in an effort to hinder its top money-making scheme. There will be three lines of effort: intelligence, disrupt and degrade operations, and deliver legal consequences. CBP and partners will support ongoing investigations tied to both plaza operations as well as the plaza boss. So this is a little bit of a different strategy. If you can't get the head boss, maybe you get the plaza bosses. And if you take enough plaza bosses out of the equation, does that have a significant impact on cartel operations and cartel finances? Noted it a minute ago, but one of the interesting things in this operation is a pronounced focus on the illegal exportation of weapons and currency from the United States. The idea being that if you severely restrict the outbound exportation of weapons and currency, you hamper the cartel's ability to wage violence in furtherance of their drug and human trafficking empire. And again, that comes straight from the fact sheet from the CBP. How are they going to do this? CBP says they've got a whole variety of action and authorities. Some of those actions include revoking visas from known associates, scrutinizing cross-border business entities, cross-border trade, seizing illicit proceeds, and other things. Here's a quick quote from Troy Miller, who is the CBP senior official performing the duties of the commissioner. He says, "We are entering the next phase of our fight against fentanyl, one where we are going after the plaza bosses, whose organizations are responsible for virtually everything that is smuggled into the United States. By targeting them for enforcement action, we can directly impact their operations and ability to traffic fentanyl into the United States, which makes its way into communities all across the country." Now, this is the important, and we'll talk about this more in a second. Sergio Valenzuela. Valenzuela is the first plaza boss that we are targeting, but he will not be the last. Just as the men and women of CBP are steadfast in the fight against fentanyl, we will be unrelenting in our pursuit of those people and organizations that threaten the safety and security of our people and our country. CBP nicely defines a plaza for us, and it says that a plaza is a specific territory controlled by a cartel in Mexico, located in a strategic geographic location, often directly south of a U.S. border crossing. They say there are 27 plazas operating in Mexico. Plaza bosses are high-ranking cartel officials who control all illicit activity through the plaza: extortion, kidnapping, trafficking of humans, drugs, firearms. Nothing happens in the plaza without the plaza boss knowing about it, directing it, or taking a cut. We might be able to quibble with some of that and question just to what extent any cartel and any plaza has absolute control or how many do. But that's what the CBP is saying. We mentioned the name Sergio Valenzuela. Valenzuela, CBP said that he is responsible for the most fentanyl heading to the United States in Nogales, Mexico. Here's the one that made the headlines. CBP says he and his organization are responsible for 44% of the fentanyl being trafficked into the United States. I'm going to repeat that. He is saying that Sergio Valenzuela heads the Nogales, Mexico plaza, and that that plaza and its organization are responsible for 44% of the fentanyl being trafficked to the United States. So no wonder that made some headlines, right? So you may be asking yourself, who is this Sergio Valenzuela? Well, I'm going to tell you about him. Milenio had an article, came out last week, that talks about him. There are others in Mexico. La Opinion in the United States had an article. A couple of others, and then Borderline Beat had a little bit of an article. Borderline Beat, who I highly respect, but a lot of that was taken from other sources. So I'm going to largely use the Milenio account because I like it. It went farther in depth than most of the others that I saw. It also has kind of a unique Mexican point of view that I will point out in a couple of places. One of the things that you're going to hear, and if you've read anything about Operation Plaza Spike or Valenzuela, you know, that not much is known about him. He kind of came out of nowhere. That's not really true. There are articles dating back to early 2021 talking about his presence in Nogales, but he's been able to stay a little bit under the radar. Let's put it that way. According to Milenio, this is one I think you'll like, says that he started to obtain prominence in 2004, and I'm reading directly from Milenio, when El Mayo Zambada and El Chapo Guzman ordered the Beltran-Leyva brothers to recover northern Sonora after a series of fleeting plaza bosses who did not achieve the performance achieved by Emilio Quintero, uncle of Rafael Caro Quintero. Again, I think it's interesting whether or not El Mayo and El Chapo were ordering the Beltran-Leyva brothers to do things. But again, nevertheless. So the strategy of Arturo and Alfredo Beltran-Leyva was that each municipality would have an allied but independent arm wing to prevent a domino effect. If one of them fell, then they would all fell. And as a result, you'd have born these independent armed wings, Los Numeros, Los Paredes, Los Reos, and others. The one in particular, a group by the name of Los Jabales, were led by somebody by the name of Jose Vasquez Villagran, or Villagrana, depending on where you look. His nickname is El Jabalí. He was one who coordinated the arrival of cocaine in Nogales from Colombia and Nicaragua. His nickname came from characteristics of a wild animal: wild, tough, murderous, etc. One of his proteges was Sergio Valenzuela Valenzuela. When he was young, he was nicknamed El Hijo because as a child, it was difficult for him to pronounce his own name. As a teenager, he joined the organized crime group in Sonora. Apparently, his family, the Valenzuelas, were notorious alcohol marijuana traffickers, and had been since the mid-20th century. El Jabalí was an interesting character, too. He actually has a U.S. nationality. In 1990, he enrolled at a military base in southern Arizona, and it said that he learned the strategies that the government and the military were using against the Mexican cartels. He defected shortly after completing this training, went to Mexico, and instilled several things that he had learned from his training in the United States: ambushes, training, and the use of long guns. If we go on for a little bit, when there was a split between CDS and BLO, right? Remember, they blamed El Chapo for one of the brothers being arrested. Zetas declared war on CDS, El Chapo and El Mayo. When all this happened, El Hijo really made use of Valenzuela, who by this time had already gotten a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of a reputation. So, though he never was directly related to the Mexican or to the American government, American military, Valenzuela had direct access to military information from his boss and his mentor, right? And he used that to his advantage, and there were a series of events in about 2009 when he was very effective at raiding safe houses of the Beltran Leyva group and Los Zetas in Nogales. It's said that his sadism and his ability to replicate military operations to annihilate the traitors of the Sinaloa cartel immediately made him lord and master of the Arizona border. In 2010, El Jabalí was arrested in Santa Ana, Sonora, about an hour away, and Valenzuela was crowned the new boss. Interesting enough, it's said that kind of this unexpected rookie, which I don't know how you can really say that, but he assumed the role of El Mayo's right-hand man at just the age of 41 years. In the years that followed, Valenzuela was or is said to have been a very crucial ally, very crucial component of the inner circle of El Mayo. He consolidated the Nogales Plaza as one of the most profitable narcotic routes in the country. He also positioned himself as the Lord of Wars. He was the one that was put in charge of announcing to the enemies of El Mayo that the old capo was declaring an armed conflict for meddling in their territories. It is said that according to a DOJ file, there was so much trust between Valenzuela and El Mayo that in November 2013, El Mayo commissioned Valenzuela to make the necessary arrangements for his son, Serafin Zambada Ortiz, to cross into Nogales, Arizona to voluntarily surrender to the United States in order to negotiate the exoneration of his crimes in exchange for collaboration. It is said that based on things that Valenzuela did, that he orchestrated the surrender in such a way that Serafin Zambada became a free man after serving only 66 months in prison and avoiding the life sentence that a lot of others have received. It is said that that event or series of events sealed the friendship between El Mayo and Valenzuela. Between 2015 and 2016, it is said that Valenzuela allied himself with different criminals in the north of Mexico. He was trying, it is said, to emulate what the BLO had tried to do. That is to have several independent armed wings for greater territorial control. So you had several armed cells that were at the service of this plaza boss, Las Malas Mañas, Los Salados de Plomo. There were others. One that struck out in particular is well known as Los Siete Demonios. They are the ones who kind of helped Gijo, become the king of fentanyl. It also led him to be labeled by the CBP as one of, if not the most wanted criminal of the United States in Mexico. One of the things, I don't know if you'll find this interesting, you might. So one of the names that El Hijo's group is known as is named the Seven Demons. And apparently, Valenzuela is a drug trafficker, brutal, savage, sadistic, but also has a fondness for reading the Bible. And so he has this name, the Seven Demons, inspired by the passage of the seven men of faith who were chosen to serve God unconditionally. That's in the Old Testament, David, Gideon, Samson, Jeremiah, Nehemiah, Joshua, and Samuel. In Nogales, they have aliases such as El Loco, El 63, El 20. We've all seen and heard kind of the aliases that drug traffickers tend to have. The seven demons are said to be the power, the pillar of power, the base of power for Valenzuela and, by extension, El Mayo. So it is said that they are loyal to the death, that those seven, or each of these, has a platoon that traverses the deserts of Sonora and Arizona daily. They are generally between the ages of 18 and 25. The think tank Insight Prime once said the revelation of the reach of Los Dominos Demonios in the United States indicates that the Sinaloa cartel continues to rely on specific cells in charge of criminal territories or economies which answer to a central command. The Department of Justice has said that one of the last tasks that Valenzuela has performed for El Mayo was to declare war on Los Chapitos in Nogales. There was an announcement through him that Los Chapitos were no longer welcome in the desert. The cartel also then created other armed wings, and that precipitated response from the Los Chapitos side. So they created another armed wing called La Gente Nueva del Cazador that is said to be in charge of basically killing, the quote is, everything that smells of the old guard in the Sinaloa cartel. Valenzuela is their main target. Now, as a result of Operation Plaza Spike, Valenzuela, who's 54, is the main target not only of Los Chapitos, but also of the United States government. So that gives you a bit of an idea of who he is. The United States Department of Treasury Office of Foreign Assets Control released a organizational chart of the Valenzuela organization. This is a couple of years old, but it has Valenzuela at the top and almost in a direct line, but saying reporting to El Mayo. It says that he is responsible for the transportation and importation of multi-ton quantities of illicit drugs into the United States. Valenzuela was indicted on drug trafficking charges in the Southern District of California, September 18, 2018. Below him, there are three main lieutenants, if you will. Their names aren't necessarily important. Interestingly enough, two of them are old. Hell, one of them is as old as I am. One of them is a little bit younger, but you have to go down another line before you start seeing younger people born in the 80s. They also say that these three lieutenants under Valenzuela own certain businesses, including businesses located in Hermosillo and in Ciudad Juarez, and that's part of their ability to traffic into the United States is through these businesses, these commercial operations, remembering again how big of a traffic point the border entry at Nogales can be. Okay, that is Operation Plaza Spike, and that is Nogales, and that is Valenzuela. Again, I find this extremely interesting in a couple of senses. One is almost a question of why it took so long to focus on the plazas and the plaza bosses. That's number one. Number two is just a question of going forward of how successful this will be. And then three is, what's the counter move? Right? We know that if one point is getting choked off, they being the cartels, will try to move to a different point. What might that be? What's the next step? And then, of course, I think the final question is, if the U.S. is able to get to Valenzuela, Valenzuela. Purely a hypothetical, but if they are, what does that say, or what could come from that, given his close association with El Mayo? You keep wondering, is there somebody who has a good enough relationship, knows enough to be able to offer the United States, the Mexican government, information significant enough to create a domino effect within the cartel? Right. So far, the answer to that is not really. It hasn't really happened, right? El Mayo's still there. El Mencho's still there. El Chapo was a case unto himself, right? He created his own problems, and it wasn't necessarily being ratted out or information being given out about him. All right. I think that's enough for today. I hope you found this interesting. Like I've said 1,000 times, I just find this very interesting and something to monitor as we go forward. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, have a couple of interesting things for you. I'm going to have a couple of academics in May who are scheduled for episodes on the podcast. I think you'll find those gentlemen extremely interesting. Look out for the newsletter. I've had a couple people in the last week or so reach out and get signed up for it. Comes out every Sunday morning. It's free. You'll enjoy it. Look for my book. I always pitch Jaime Kirkendall's book if you're interested in the Camarena case. And with that, this is and has been Cartels, Conspiracies, and Camarena for this week. I will talk to you next week. Thanks, everyone.